So driving in my car, Drop It Like It's Hot by Snoop Dogg mm-hmm. is on the radio. And it's got that, to me, very memorable, I don't know what you call it, bass line, beat line. It's got that guy just right up on the microphone going.
Yep.
At what point in the creative process do you think Snoop was like, we need to put this needs something. We're not quite there.
I think it was about 8 blunts in, maybe.
You think so?
Yeah, I think it's a blunt count for
but
that.
But then I was thinking about, and white guy, not the target audience, you know, not saying you can't, but it's just, I'm not going to say hip-hop's my number one go-to genre of music, but I got to thinking about there was a song in the 2000s, can't even remember what the who the female artist was, but in the song, it had a baby that was doing something similar, not clicking its tongue like that, but that was just like this baby like laughing in this song. And it's a it wasn't a one-time thing. It's a reoccurring thing in this song. Tell Me, Are You That Somebody? I think that's what the song was. Maybe it was Aaliyah or someone like that. But I don't know. It just got me thinking. I'm just thinking about these interesting like beats they put into hip-hop. Uh-huh. And just like it all started. Craig just joined us. It all started with hearing Drop It Like It's Hot on the radio just now. That yep. Boo.
Yeah, it's so, all it's the summation of all those sounds. Yes.
Okay, but see, that's another interesting one. So that just has to be some guy doing that. That's not an instrument or a synthesizer. That's just some guy on a microphone going.
The one that I learned recently, you may have seen this because it was in my feed, so I assume it's in everybody's feed. The sample for D-Light. You know, Grooves in the Heart?
Yeah.
That's
good. Oh, no. I thought you were talking about the other D-Light song.
Deep cuts. Deep cuts with D-Light. Yeah. But it's that, I couldn't dance for another. You know mm-hmm. what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
So do you know what that's from?
I don't.
What?
Yeah. So that's sampled from something else.
I thought she was just singing it.
She's not.
What?
Yeah. It's a sample. It's all from something else. Okay. First of all, the idea for the beat itself comes from the Two of Hearts.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
But so the actual sound is Zsa Zsa Gabor in Green Acres.
I get allergic smelling hay.
What? And it's just the
Nuh-uh.
Yes.
That's great.
And so they just sampled the and so it's and they did that classic, like, I've got a sample on a keyboard now. It's just like,
I just thought it was
for another.
Who, don't know her name.
Yeah. But so they sing the I couldn't dance for another or with a lover or whatever it is.
But it sounds like her. I couldn't dance with another.
Yeah.
That's not her.
Well,
I know the whatever.
Yeah, but the that is Zsa Zsa Gabor.
Y'all are really stress testing the overload know, right? on the board too, by the way.
Don't blame us. Blame D-Light. This is on them.
What?
What was going on in the studio that day with Snoop Dogg? It's like,
well, another one with a crazy hook, please. Is Thrift Shop, right? Because they have that wild saxophone.
I guess because that's a musical instrument in a song, that doesn't resonate me as much as literally like, hey guy, click your tongue.
Yeah.
click your tongue.
But they're similarly rhythmic versus tonal, right?
I guess so. Everything's been blown out of the portion now that he's told me about this D-Light nonsense. Like that to me trumps all.
Zsa Zsa Gabor.
And like in the early to mid 90s, someone was like, you know what this song needs? I was watching Nigganite.
Green Acres.
We need to get some Zsa Zsa Gabor into this. Trust me, it'll be a hit.
It's all a blunt count. He asked me when I thought that happened, the tongue clicking in the thing, and I said, it's like 8 blunts in. Like, that's when that happens.
Yeah.
That's when the realization strikes.
I guess the question I was asking was, how far in the creative process, and creative can involve blunts, like,
it's not a can, it does.
Yeah, of course.
I certainly didn't discount it.
Yeah, but I mean, like, I would just be curious, though, like, was it from inception? Like, he was writing the songs, like, I've got these lyrics, this guy's going to click his tongue, it's going to be great. Or what did it get so far as they were in the studio recording, and they're like, we're missing something.
It's probably some dude just sitting in the corner, and he's just like.
Hey, wait just a second now.
Well, no, we need a beat. It sounds kind of like this. And then he started clicking. Uh-huh. It was like, let's get that track down. So, right, and then we'll find it later, and then it's like, let's just keep it.
Okay, see, that story makes sense to me.
Because that was a lot of what Michael Jackson did as well. He couldn't really play an instrument, but he could sing all the harmonies and everything he wanted in it. And so he would record exactly what he wanted it to sound like and then say, Quincy Jones or whoever, make this.
Yeah. We still haven't found that hee-hee sound. Michael, we're just going to have to keep it. That's it.
Can somebody play the hee-hee?
But I don't want to do that, Quincy.
Ow!
I wanted to sound like ow. Yeah. Trivia: no one knows this. There are no musical instruments in a Michael Jackson song. It's just Michael Jackson making those sounds.
You could convince me that's true.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I just need a little do 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 do.
As crazy as he was in other respects, he was in a tremendous musical talent.
Oh, he's just one of those people. His brain was operating on a different level musically, yeah. Right? And yeah. And coming up in the Jackson 5, he had the fundamentals of what made good pop music and what was fun to groove on without having to ever really learn how to play an instrument. He knew what sounded good.
Mm-hmm.
But he never exploited the Zsa Zsa Gabor.
We don't know that.
We don't know what he did with Zsa Zsa.
Well, I mean, not in the studio.
he was a Elizabeth. Who was it he hung out with?
Elizabeth Taylor.
Yeah.
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 And I think Elizabeth trumped Zsa Zsa, if we're looking back.
Look, Zsa Zsa wanted to be Elizabeth Taylor, if you want to get down to it.
Got there.
Yeah. Everybody wanted to be Elizabeth Taylor.
I mean, if Green Acres, you know, star power aside, could have casted Elizabeth Taylor or Zsa Zsa, they'd have gotten Elizabeth Taylor. Yeah.
So you talking earlier about 8 Blunts in the Studio.
Sure.
Which is my new album. I don't know if you need to say
it. He's going to drop it like it's hot next week.
Think about that. Like, because you know in those studio spaces, you've got the musicians who are always like, they're taking it serious, but also it's a party. Like, that's part of what being a musician is. It's like, we're going to smoke weed. We're going to drink cocktails all day. We're rock stars.
Those who can afford to spend that much studio time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Say, these are the studio musicians who are probably just getting paid to stand there while somebody like Michael Jackson is coming up with stuff,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But think about the engineers and everybody else who has to be stone cold sober all day long in that process. And then when Snoop Dogg is like, so I'm going to add this part, it's like,
sure.
A fully sober engineer has to just be like, yeah, Snoop, let's do that.
Mm-hmm. I'm assuming he's being paid by the hour as well, so hopefully he's just basking in it.
Yeah.
Just doing my crossword, whatever.
It's so surreal, though, to be in, because it's an office building. It's a space where you've got artists that are just like, no rules on what they can do. Like, people were doing drugs in the booth to do whatever they need to do to get it on the album.
Because all that mattered was how much money is this potentially going to make, man?
Yeah,
okay,
exactly.
Sure.
Have you seen the documentary on the one it's somewhere in the Caribbean, and now my brain won't give me that. But
Caribbean Queen, the Billy Ocean story?
No.
Oh, okay.
It's a recording.
Caribbean Queen!
It's a recording studio that was in the Caribbean. I think it was on a Virgin Island, uh-huh. One of the Virgin Islands. And there are all these people that went down there and recorded like these seminal albums in this studio.
Huh. No, I haven't
and
heard about
And then it got
this.
Destroyed by a hurricane. Like, the shell of the thing is still there. But there's a great documentary on it.
Hmm. Did the Beatles do anything down there? Or was it Sting? Maybe the police?
Sting, yeah, the police
did.
Did
something
yeah.
down there. Okay, I've heard of that studio.
Yeah, and there were numerous artists in that period that did, that would go there to sort of get away from all the outside influences and just be able to focus on what they were doing.
I wonder how many Makes of sense. Them ended up having a Caribbean reggae feel to them anyway. Just
Billy
we should do the song, but in reggae.
Yeah.
That's a fair. I mean, but that's something that artists, you know, really make a point of doing. I've seen many movie interviews and documentaries where they talk about how it's like Breakfast Club. There's no reason Breakfast Club, the movie, couldn't have been filmed in Hollywood, California, because the majority of it takes place inside a library, mm-hmm. build it in a soundstage. But instead, the director, John Hughes, was like, no, we're going to the Midwest. Even though they had to build the library set. That was a set built inside of a school gym one summer. But one of his main reasons was not just studio interference. Number one, yes, studios aren't going to come and visit because you're that far away. But also, he wanted to force all of the actors. It's like, if we're in Hollywood, we're where everybody lives, they're just going to go continue their own lives when they're not filming this movie. But if we go to the Midwest, to a small town, they got nothing to do. Mm-hmm. So they're going to be forced to hang out with each other and actually bond and grow. So there's legitimate reasons to like separate yourself mm-hmm. for artistic purposes and to force yourself into a headspace to get something done, not just for you, but also get away from that interference.
Art! It's for art!
Art!
Art.
There you go.
Maybe that's what it really was. They were able to get the weed faster in the Caribbean. I mean, maybe.
It just grows right outside the door and nobody cares.
Yeah, I need to go outside and take a break.
There is something to be said about the correlation of making music with getting stoned smoking weed. I mean, they do line up. I see why it's in the studios. I see why so many hip-hop artists do it as well. It's like, it takes your brain in a weird place, allows you everybody, but it also ends up with like a lot of noodling too.
Yeah. Like, there's
jazz. There's it winds up with jazz. Yeah.
It's called jazz.
Yeah.
The big point is like, what's the payoff versus the
cost
ratio. Yeah. Exactly. Like I heard an interview recently with Weird Al talking about the first time he recorded My Bologna with Capitol Records.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was a nobody. He still had to pay for the studio time. So he was talking about how, like, you know, he recorded it, and that first recording, he was like, yeah, if you listen to that actual first record, the Capitol Records version, it's like, it's too fast. It's because I was nervous.
Yeah.
And I knew how much the time was costing me. Like, he was literally like, if I go to the bathroom, that's $100.
Mm.
So, like, he was, like, under a lot of pressure because he was still just a nobody.
Yeah.
So it was just, it was interesting.
Dave Grohl, the first Foo Fighters album.
Mm-hmm.
Read through his book.
Yeah.
It's pretty good. Anyway, like all of that was like bits of leftover tape predominantly to start with from other recording sessions.
Interesting.
So he would go in and try and take any time that was left from somebody else.
Huh.
As he was sort of working through a lot of his, just the stuff he was dealing with the collapse of Nirvana after Cobain killed himself. And
I never thought about the Muse recording. I know that in low budget filmmaking back when people had to shoot on film. They would shoot on ends, which were basically the ends of film reels that weren't used by bigger productions.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yep. Huh. And that's because he played like everything on that first album, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, he'd just go in and he'd practice and practice, practice and go in and just sort of blow through a song to get it down.
Cost money.
Yeah.
It costs time once you're in the studio.
Yeah. But he never brought any of that up in Nirvana because of the famous joke that he always likes to say.
Yep.
Right. What's the last thing the drummer said to the band?
Got an idea for a song.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hadn't heard that. That's good guy, Dave Grohl.
Yeah.
He is. It's called Storyteller. Mm-hmm. But it's an interesting little book that really goes into, to some degree, how charmed his life has been. He has also been rocked on multiple occasions by suicide from friends and people that he's
overdose
worked with.
As well.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And this was prior to Taylor. I can't remember the guy's last
Hawkins?
Name. Yeah. Taylor Hawkins' suicide. This book finished before that. So adds on to the story. But it just a cool, really laid back, sort of unassuming dude, according to the book anyway.
He seems like he'd be a pretty cool dude to hang out with.
Yeah, he does.
I'm about to say, not just his own accounts, but other people's as well.
If you will rent a truck as a musical superstar to drive down the road and Rickroll people, I think you're my kind of guy. Like, I can hang out with you.
Well, he spends major holidays, like, barbecuing for his local homeless shelter.
Yeah.
He, I think one time, broke his arm on stage during a concert.
Leg.
Went and got it. Leg. And then came back to finish the concert.
It is in the, that is in the book.
Oh, wow.
Like, the doctor had to sit there and hold his foot in place.
Oof.
While he played.
I didn't see that in the picture.
Because if he let it go, it would fall to the side.
I mean, like, hopefully it was just like one more song.
No, they had really just gotten rolling.
Jeez.
And he went going across the stage, tripped on a cable, and thought it was a good idea to jump into the pit because it was where he was going because he thought it was controllable. Snapped his ankle.
Nope.
Mm.
They drug him back up out of there, and he didn't want to disappoint the crowd, so they put him in the chair. And the doctor said, if I let go of your foot, then it's going to fall. And he was like, then you're going to sit here with me and hold my foot while we finish the show.
And then could still keep composure to sing and play his guitar.
Presumably. Yeah. I've not heard any of what happened after
that.
The
song actually sounds like. I got a new song.
He just sat there.
And he got so lucky getting into Nirvana, too,
right? Oh, yeah.
Like, because he wasn't the original drummer for the band.
Yeah.
But I forget what other band he was in. I'm sure you just read the book, so you know much more.
As my memory goes, I can't remember the name of the one he was in, but it was a punk band.
It was a punk band.
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy? And, like, the same thing with Pete Best. Like, you're on the verge of being in the most popular band in the world, and then they replace you like right before. Mm-hmm. And so then you get to have this whole other life that you would have never had. And it's just so wild. When I was in Seattle last week, there's a museum there that has an exhibit just for Nirvana.
Oh, I'm sure.
So it was pretty cool. One of his drum kits is in there as well. The reason I thought of that is because, of course, in that exhibit, you see where they had, you know, one drummer before, but very briefly. His kit's not in the exhibit.
Nope. Footnote.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I see that way with life in general. It's just like the fact that I'm in this room with you guys right now. It's like if I really thought about it, I could trace it back to minute little moments that brought me to this point here. You can call it kismet, karma, fate, whatever.
Punishment.
You might.
Oh, punish. Sorry.
That's more fitting. But you can call it whatever. But I can think about the minutia, the moments. I won't go into the specifics, but I know why I'm married to Meredith right now. Like I can trace that back to one specific moment and be like, okay, if I hadn't been doing that day and speaking with this person, you know, I probably wouldn't have asked out my wife. I certainly wouldn't have done it as quickly as I did. Mm-hmm. And if I hadn't have done it as quickly as I did, she might have moved somewhere else. I don't know. So it's weird. Just life is...
It's random and specific at the same time, right?
Yeah.
You'll have a random occurrence that then you either you choose path A or choose path B.
And then don't try to figure out which it is. Mm-hmm. It's just, that's just life. Oh gosh. Let's get deep. Let's get real deep. I mean, yeah. I mean, boop. That's what it was. So they're in between sessions recording that song. And Snoop or somebody was getting way too deep for whatever reason. And then someone's just like, we got to just distract them.
Yeah.
That's all right.
I'll say I enjoy the ebb and flow of life. It takes you into interesting things and sometimes moves you out of interesting things and to more interesting things.
Yeah. It's like trying to float in the ocean. It's going to take you one direction or another. Mm-hmm. Just let it.
Yeah.
Let me backtrack for a moment and talk about how my Snoop Dogg impression is really just Matthew McConaughey. Can we just backtrack a moment?
Bongos Matthew McConaughey? Or
I mean, is there any other type? Who am I impersonating right now? You tell me.
I don't know.
You've seen the video of the two of them hanging out together, though, right?
I have not.
Oh, you haven't?
I bet if you close your eyes, you can't figure out who's talking.
Oh, you really haven't seen the video of McConaughey and Snoop Dogg hanging out together?
No.
You've seen it, right?
I have not.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I need to see this.
Yeah.
Should I ask what they were doing?
They're getting takeout, and they're in the car. And it's like literally, they're stoned. It is obvious. It's so obvious.
All right.
And there's a lot of that.
For shizzle.
Yeah, just like chilling in the groove. Going.
Are they in a Cadillac?
There's
Lincoln. He does Lincoln.
They might be in a Lincoln, but he's the one that's driving. He's got these giant glasses on, these giant sunglasses on, like the blue blockers that are like halfway up the forehead and halfway down the cheeks.
You say he, which he?
Oh, sorry. McConaughey.
Okay,
Snoop is in his regular.
McConaughey, hey.
Yeah.
Stoners in cars getting takeout. That's the new series?
Yeah. I'd watch it.
I'm about to say, yeah, which one of them's hosting? I don't think anyone's hosting at that point.
No one hosts that show.
Yeah, no one is at that point.
The guy at the window at the takeout is the only one saying anything that makes sense.
It's not a bad idea for a show.
But apparently it was part of Carpool Karaoke, just so you know.
Ah!
What?
That makes good sense. 14.
Wait, so was like that Corgan guy, was he in there with him?
He's not in the picture I'm looking at. God, but
yeah, I'm about to say, what a third wheel.
Look how
that would
stone
have been.
Snoop Dogg is in that. Look at his eyes. It's
just, have they ever kicked someone off a movie for smoking weed?
I'm sure they have, but
I can see other drugs being a problem.
It was a certain star structure, I'm sure.
It would have to be out of an action movie, right? You couldn't get kicked out of anything but an action movie for smoking weed.
One of my favorite movies, The Burbs. In a documentary, several people, not just one, several, including the director, accounted how Corey Feldman, who was in the movie at the time, that was his big hangout with Michael Jackson phase, apparently Bubbles the chimpanzee was like in Corey Feldman's trailer during the making of that movie. Bubbles the monkey was banned from the Burbs trailer because of the damage he was causing the Corey Feldman's trailer. That is a real sentence. That's a real thing that happened in the world.
But that's fair.
Oh, it is, I mean, fair, but who saw that sentence coming?
True.
Somebody had to deal with that too.
They're yes.
Like, your Bubbles monkey is getting a little out of hand.
There was a time in history on the set of a Tom Hanks movie that Bubbles the chimp had to be ejected from the set.